Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today I am bringing you part two with Hal Bowman. We are still talking about knowing our whys, but here we dive into some, what I would call some of the deepest self-reflective questioning that we've ever had on the podcast. We dive into some of the most powerful questions you can ask yourself to get yourself to be better, to get your classroom to be better, and to elevate everything you're doing. So make sure to stick around. I will see you at the very end for a small reflection. Let's go. You know, changing my room and putting lights everywhere and, you know, trying to make it a place that I want. Like, the reason I kind of have it kind of dark is because I wanted it to literally be a portal from the bright hallways.
Yeah.
And stuff. And I was like,
I get it.
Yeah. And it works though, because they're like, oh, you know, this is my classroom. Like today, you know, we do a launch at the end of every class and it goes, I'm gonna be light. We do it four times and we do the last one super loud. And they were like, this last one was this is the last one they were ever going to do in my room today, because the next two half days are crazy and I don't have my normal kids. And they gave it their all, but it was like this, they built that because they became invested in kind of what I set up, but I let them, you know, it was like this creation thing. But I think that was me feeling it out. Like, I didn't go into it thinking it like that. I could just imagine, like, if I was listening to this a year ago. You know, having that information, I think, would really make a big difference in terms of, you know, asking yourself, you know, what do you want it to be?
Yeah, I think, and we're getting clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd be surprised for teachers that are lost. Just ask him that simple question. You know, what do you want it to be? If you're gonna have anything, because you're gonna end up with something. I suggest you define that now before we get started. But here's the best thing, dude. You could totally shift gears on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you're like, even if today was October 7th, and you know, you're not feeling it, you're not on the right track, the kids, there's no leadership in the classroom, we haven't come together as a family, you can start brand new. That's the best thing about kids. You know, I've done it before. I have all the, just locked the door. We all met in the hallway. Hey, I don't want to go in there anymore. It's just not happening, man. Let's start over. I mean, let's completely start over.
Yeah.
Let's figure this thing out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll sit on the floor. Let's talk about it. Because I don't, you know, that place is sacred. And what we're disrespectful to each other. We're not really accomplishing anything. We're not being productive in there. I don't feel like I'm teaching well. You don't feel like you're learning. So let's just start over. And you know what kids do? They start over.
Yep.
They're unbelievably resilient.
Yeah. Well, you know, I forget that sometimes. Like, I've had bad, you know, I forget it. Like, I try to really be engaged with my students on, you know, intellectual, social, and emotional level. That way, you know, I'm being there for them. Whatever they need from me that day.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they need me to be, you know, whatever it is, right? I mean, everyone kind of knows what I'm talking about, but sometimes I'll get distracted because we need to get something done. And I got a kid who's having a hard day that day, right? He's got his head down. And I act like, you know, I push him, you know, to get your head up, blah, blah, blah. But, obviously this kid needs something at that point.
Yep.
Obvious.
Yeah.
But I'm so lost in what I'm trying to get done because of whatever reason that I completely
teaching.
Blow over
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
And it's super challenging. But then, you know, I go home and the guilt trip happens, right? Because I'm a reflective person by nature. And I'm like, you know what? That kid didn't need me to yell at him four times that day. He needed me to figure, you know, to do something else,
right?
And
but here's the thing, dude. When you come back and you're totally authentically honest about that with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, listen. I was thinking about you last night. Powerful. Right there, that alone is a powerful statement.
Yeah.
Hey, brother. I was thinking about you on the way to school this morning. I was driving in thinking about you. Listen, man. Yesterday, that whole deal, like, I was trying to get your head up. I was trying to get you engaged. I shouldn't have yelled at you. All right, maybe once, but not four times. Here's what I should have done. In fact, I'll show you. Here, come over here. Let's talk. And that, you know, like that right there is every that's the thing. That's like the beauty of the kid.
Yeah.
They're not, there's no grudges. You know, it's okay. Let's talk. That's the amazing part. But I think we forget that.
Yeah.
You know, it's also like that crazy notion of, you know, I'm into procedures. Like, I'm in, like, I like it. I like procedures a lot. But at the same time, if it ain't working, it ain't working.
Yep.
And, like, you, like, so.
Don't die on the hill just to do it.
Yeah, man. Let's start over and come up with different procedures. You know, we got, you know, 28 kids in a class. We have to have some sense of a procedure and consistency. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big rule guy, but we're going to have a couple. You know, the thing is, but if they're not working, they're not working. I can admit it. Listen, these procedures are working for my other four classes, but not this one. We got to figure something else out. So to be inflexible, I think that's something along there too.
So when it comes to like taking your class to the next level, because, you know, I think we all, if we look at our class, honestly, we all know there's things that we can improve on, right? There's the little pieces that we haven't mastered yet, or maybe our culture's, you know, by December it's dying down or whatever. Yeah. Maybe it's the end of the year and you become super lax and now your classroom isn't working that well.
Right.
I had to focus on that for me about 3 weeks ago. I was like, you know what? I'm not holding them accountable for a lot of the stuff that I used to, and that's on me.
Yep.
And I had to fix some of that. But do you think that's harder to do the more years you're in it or the less years? Like, which ones – are they the same or is it different?
I think it's the same for different reasons. I think at the beginning, because you don't know any better, you're too immature.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really into severe ownership. Like, like you're talking about it. If it's terrible in this class, it's because I am terrible.
Have you ever read Jocko's book? Willing it?
I know extreme ownership. I'm aware of it. I might possibly own it, but I own it. I own a lot of books. Right, I'm not saying I've read a lot of books, but I've owned it. I feel like owning it at some point, you know, yeah, it's going to absorb. But I'm into, like, I know I take it too far. Like, yeah. I believe if I got hit, if I left here today and got run over by a car, in my mind, I would, right before I got hit, I would think, oh, I should have left earlier.
Right.
Like, it's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the same thing, like, if your class is amazing, own it. You're doing it because you're amazing. You're doing an amazing job. But if my class is terrible, it's because I am terrible.
Yeah, it's not the kids' fault.
And here's why. If I put 1% of that on the kids, then that 1% is always going to be there. And I'm going to say, well, it's because of these kids. And then I can't change it. If it's 100% me and my fault, I can change it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to own it. If I own it, I can change it. If I put a little bit on the kid, or the principal, or the neighborhood, or the facilities, or the lack of technology, or whatever, the excuse, the lack of funding, as soon as I give that away, then I can't affect it anymore.
One of the biggest things I've run into over and over again with, you know, the stuff that we've been able to do on this campus, taking our initiative with reading that we've done, which is empowering them to be independent readers, right? Stop holding their hands, give them the tools, encourage them, constantly feed them books until you got them, right? Yeah. And it works. It flat out works. We don't inherit readers in my sixth grade classroom. I might inherit five. From the class before, but most of them don't read. They've maybe only read Hank the Cowdog because that's what their fourth grade teacher read to them, right? But other than that, a whole lot of nothing. And by the end of the year, they're plowing through my library. You know, I have to replace 40% of my library because their books are gone. And that's a quality problem. But I've run into so many teachers who go, my kids won't read.
Yep.
Our kids won't read. You know, our kids, you know, they're a lot of ELL, so, you know, they're not going to read. They need the reading programs and stuff. And it's like my, you know, the ownership piece, right? Like if they're not going to read, it's probably because you don't read, right? Like, you know, and it's, but it's the same for discipline, right? My kids aren't disciplined. Well,
let's take a look at your life.
Well, that's for me. Like, you know, I really want to be – I want to be a leader, right? Yeah. And I look at myself and I know, like, you know, I got poor diet. Uh-huh. I eat like a three-year-old sometimes, right? Too much fried food, all that stuff. I don't work out enough. Uh-huh. And I'm looking at myself and I'm like, you know what? If I want to be running a school in however many years in the future, I need to get my stuff together because I want people to look at me when I want to hold someone accountable.
Sure.
I want to already be that. You know what I mean? Practice what I preach. But I feel like – I don't know. At what point does that ever become unhealthy to where you put so much stress on yourself to be a certain type of person?
I you know, I'm sure for some, just like anybody else.
I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, for somebody.
Right.
But you know, I think if we keep it in check and realize that you're just doing the best you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one's perfect. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think you know what I do like is you know if like I always say, if they're gonna be it, those kids, if the kid's gonna be it, they have to see it. I have to show it if I'm gonna grow it in that kid. So you're right. If I teach ELA, if I'm not walking around with a book talking about the oh my god, you're gonna believe what happened in this. I was reading last night. You know, if I'm not walking about, you know, incredibly excited about what's happening inside of these pages, they don't know what an excited reader really looks like, mm-hmm. and they can't be it unless they see it. I can't grow it unless I show it. But that's true in every aspect. Like we're talking about in leadership, you know, if in terms of the school, you know, if it's a requirement for teachers to greet kids at the door here at the junior high school, well, if I don't have a principal who's greeting teachers at the door and greeting kids at the door, then if I'm that principal, I have no right to expect anybody else to do it.
Yeah.
Regardless of what my busy schedule is or whatever, however I'm going to justify that excuse.
Well, I think it, you know, it's almost like that permission piece again, right? If you see, you know, leadership picking up trash off the ground.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you know, and then, you know, obviously you're not saying, yeah, you can do that too, but you see it and it's that reflective process, right?
Yep.
Like my students, you know, in my room this year, I made it my priority to instill a level of respect. Like we watch people when they talk, right?
Sure.
We look at them and I'm honest with them. I'm like, I go to meetings all the time. You know how many adults are not staring at the person talking? I was like, it makes you look trashy. It makes you look like you don't care.
Sure.
And I was like, if you want to be next level, then you need to be watching me when I speak. You need to be watching Johnny speak, right?
Right, right.
And I know it takes him 45 minutes to answer something, but everyone needs to be watching him. And you know what? It changed the culture of the classroom.
Sure.
Because I never looked away.
Right.
Right. And I gave them my full attention and modeling. Like, I don't think enough can be said about the power of modeling.
Dude, it's everything. What do you mean say enough? It's
literally.
That's the whole thing. You know, I mean, in terms of that whole concept, the idea that we're still at that place of teachers standing before the room. This is my class. I've got the big desk. You've got the small desk. That should tell you something. Because I said so. You know, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still happening.
Yeah.
You can walk up and down the hallway of any school in America, and you're going to find somebody still trying to sell that. It's so past its time. It just doesn't work anymore. You know, so it really is, I know I'll say it a million times, you know, showing it so I can grow it and being it so they can see it. Here's a good little story for you to kick off your next year, that conversation with the kids. I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody told it to me. I'm going to tell you as if it's true.
Okay.
So this was somebody was at an interview with Southwest Airlines for a flight – not supposed to call them flight attendant. What are you supposed to call them? Flight attendant?
I've flown one time, dude. I'm not flight the person
attendant.
To ask.
No, you can't say flight attendant. You can't say stewardess. All right,
oh, okay.
So flight attendant. So they had a flight attendant interview. It's a cattle call. Hundreds and hundreds of people there in the hotel, you know, ballroom. And they tell everybody, here's what we're going to do. You're going to give up. Everybody's going to get up and give a 5-minute speech about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start in just a couple of minutes. You can write some notes if you want to. And so they start this thing, right? And like 2 or 3 people go. They're giving a 5-minute speech. Another one get 5-minute speech. They get 4 or 5 deep into this thing, and they shut the whole thing down and say, okay, can we see the following people? And they start pointing people in a crowd. And what they did, they separated all those people that weren't paying attention. They're still taking notes, writing down thoughts, and they're going to give another speech. And they said, thanks, but no thanks. And all those people that were engaged, making eye contact with those people on the stage, giving their those people weren't even interviewed, by the way. They already worked for Southwest Airlines.
Yeah.
But they just want to see who was engaged, who was paying attention, who had the empathy and compassion. And those people like stayed for the interview. It's fascinating.
That's crazy. I hope that's a true story.
Dude, I'm going to tell it like it is.
Well, either way, you know what? Fiction has a power to give us the message, right?
Exactly.
So even if it was like that, and no, I don't that like that culture piece, right? I think that directly ties into the culture, right? Are we a culture of people who, you know, like we, like the battle, you know, I've talked to people that really hate cell phones in the classroom, but I was like, why am I going to fight this sixth grader about having a cell phone in his room when I can teach them how to use it appropriately and how not to be Snapchatting when someone's speaking in front of them or how to appropriately, you know, when you do take a picture versus when it's time to work, right? I feel like that's a better life skill than to say, no, we don't have phones in here.
It's the reality. This is... Yeah, this is what's happening.
And I'm, yeah, it's a pain in the butt. And yeah, kids are they're going to struggle with it. But you know what? I maybe took up three phones this year, and it was because the kid was just, you know, they were pushing it just a little too far. Right. Three. Yeah. 180 days, three phones, 70 kids or whatever that I have. And like that, and like when they have computers out, right? You know, oh, no, keep them closed. No, you tilt them, right? The whole digital citizenship, this is how you act when you have a computer in front of you. But like those... Like, traveling, right? You're in way more schools. You talk to way more people than I do. Do you face the same issues over and over again, or is it really diverse in terms of the issues that are affecting the classroom and the school?
You know, it's the same issues, but how they handle it is really diverse.
Yeah?
You know, whether it's a small school, let me tell you something, brother. They don't have problems with cell phones. If it's a no cell phone policy, you know what they do? They say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and they put the phones away.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different universe, you know, rather than like a suburban school, you know, where they have the same issues, but how they're handled, you know, because how they're handled has to be appropriate to that community. And to say that you could bring in those same, you know, rules and regulations that they have in a school, you know, 3 hours from a major city is absurd to think that's going to work in a population that's, you know, 20 minutes from Fort Worth.
That's a really good point. Like I have a friend who, she works out in Aledo, right? So she came from here to Aledo. Aledo's way different in terms of what their school's like and what their population and everything. And, you know, she was talking about how, you know, she was watching a teacher who, you know, really didn't have a lot of skills. She's very new and, you know, she was just kind of fumbling, but all the kids are just sitting there staring up and be, you know, super polite. She was like, if they were at, you know, RMS or one of these other schools, like, she would have been dead, right? She would have been eaten alive by these kids because you just can't operate. Do you think any schools or students get the short end of the stick in terms of culture and, like, quality of teachers because of that?
Short end of the stick in what way?
Like, so when I think of, like, communities that have kids that are more – I don't know. This is complete conjecture at this point. So feel free to correct me in a second. But like, I feel like if you're at a school that's like super well behaved and stuff, it's a lot easier to have bad teaching because that teacher can last a lot longer when the kids aren't trying to burn the place down.
Sure.
But if you're a bad teacher in terms of, and I say bad loosely here, but someone who doesn't have good classroom management, doesn't connect to the kids, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you come to a school like here, we have big turnover because we get people like that all the time. And they leave because the population ate them alive. And the kid, and they were like, you know what? Nope, I'm out. Like, do you get my question? Like, is it easier for that?
It's an interesting question. And here's why it's interesting for me is because that teacher, it could have been a personality rather than a skill issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe they didn't have the personality that could take on the presence of being able to be a leader in a classroom with such a diverse population of kid. That doesn't mean they can't be an amazing teacher at another school. And here's what brings it to mind for me is I was at a school where it was, upper middle class income school, and it was built out in the field. It wasn't anything around for miles. And then they started building neighborhoods around that school. And the neighborhood was not – these little neighborhoods, apartment complexes, were not reflective of the kids that were going to the school. And then it got rezoned for these new kids. And within a couple of years, it became a Title I super low socioeconomic school. Whole different kind of kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, for our first couple of years in that building, it's a brand new building. I mean, everybody's mom and dad went to college. Average home price is probably $300,000. You know, tons of support from the parents, all that. And these teachers, I mean, they had rigor. I mean, they were demanding, right? And then within a couple of years, whole new population of kids, same teachers. And now these teachers, they used to be called demanding, and now they're inflexible and horrible and mean to kids. Same teacher doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And for a while, I was very judgmental of those teachers. I said bad things in my mind about them.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. They were great a couple years ago. They just have the wrong kids. These aren't your kids anymore. Those are your kids over at that school. Go teach those kids. You're great with those kids.
Yeah.
These aren't your kids. So I think there's some of that that goes into it.
That's a really quality point. Well, so to lead this into kind of a closing of some sort on this message of revolutionizing culture and stuff, like, so how do you know which one you are? Are you the principal that should be at a different school?
Yeah.
Or are you a bad principal? Are you a teacher that is working with the wrong groups of kids that you're really good with? Or are you just not fit for it?
Man, that is like some crazy high-level professional maturity.
Yeah.
Self-awareness that's required. I mean, and they're out there. They're like, you know, I was telling you about my pal Jeff Springer when he was at Magnolia High School. It used to be Magnolia High School until they built the other campus at Magnolia. Now he calls it the Magnolia High School. And, nice. You know, his quote was, you know, when he won Principal of the Year, his quote was, man, I'm not even the best principal on my campus. He's self-aware to know that he's self-aware of his strengths and his weaknesses, and he hires people who are incredibly strong in the area of his weak areas. It's the same thing for anything. And I think there are principals out there that I know that are so self-aware that they're the turnaround expert. They have no interest in being out of school more than a few years. They're the turnaround.
Yeah.
They're going to turn around and hand it over.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to do it again and do it again and do it again. And they're great at it. There's other principals I know. They need to have all that in place. They're great. Once the thing has some momentum and it's on the right track, they'll keep it on the track. But so I don't think that, I think they're self-aware to know they can't get it on the track. I think teaching might be the same thing, you know. And I think I'm at the point where I'm almost at the point where it might be absurd to think that the majority of teachers can be awesome anywhere. I think those people exist. But I really do think that a lot of teachers need to have a principal that's a good match for their style. Which I don't need a dynamic principal. I need one who agrees to leave me alone. And just, man, just let me do my thing.
Yeah.
I promise it's going to be great. So let me do it. But I think some teachers might need more direction and more structure. Those are those people. And really knowing what you need and what kind of campus family, what kind of school family is the best fit for you. But you're right, dude. Like for somebody to be able to sit down and have a mature conversation about what's best for them might be hard.
Well, it's also because I feel like that conversation could easily lead you to just coming up with cop-outs for why you're being ineffective.
Yeah.
Especially as a leader,
yep. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think especially for a leader, but teachers too, like it's really easy to say, well, you know, my kids can't do that or I'm not a good fit for these kids or whatever. But, I mean, is it that? You know what I mean?
It's a huge question. I know. And yeah. Besides that, it's hard to talk about.
Yeah.
It's really hard for people to talk about because you're right, man. It lends itself to a lack of ownership that we were talking about earlier. Like, if that's true, then I don't have to own any of this. Or you can have total ownership and own all of it. Well, it's all because of me.
Oh, man, I think that's the key right there. That's how you – so if people are listening to this, you know, if you're having this thought or if you're really self-reflecting, are you self-reflecting to push ownership?
Right.
So blaming everything? Or are you having that self-reflection and really owning it regardless of what that answer is?
And, you know, I'm not even sure that this is even a conversation that I would be been capable of in, like, my first 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, because they're still figuring it out.
Yeah.
Like, this is like an ongoing art, this teaching thing. And, you know, this is like one of those professions, like, it every year. Because we're talking about kids, and they're different every year. And I think there's some things that we can transfer from year to year to year to year that kind of gives us a framework in which we're going to do this thing. But my goodness, I mean, every year there's something new, something more difficult, more challenging. And right when you haven't figured out, oh, my God, it changes again. Thank you.
I get messages from new teachers all the time, right? Brand new. They find the podcast like, thank you, I really needed this today. I needed the energy. I needed this insight or something like that. And the thing I always think about is every year to start the podcast, I recorded with one of my friends here. It was, so you want to be a teacher. And we're talking about how, you know, the average teacher years, you know, by year three, 40% of teachers toast. Have already quit, right? Yeah. Most of them don't make it to five. Once you hit five, then the retention rate is pretty stable.
Yep.
But until five, but you're not good until you're just figuring it out by year five.
Yes, right? True.
And everyone that's been in the game long enough, they've all like told me that.
Dude, my 10th year, I'm embarrassed of stuff I was doing my 10th year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but this is like, for if you're listening to this episode, right? Yeah. And you're a new teacher, I mean, you like stick it out, man. Like if you really care, right? And if you really feel like you're a part of it, then like It's just a part of the game, because what we do is amazingly difficult.
It really is.
Yeah.
And here's the here's what's interesting is it's not like a sport or a skill where like all of a sudden you're going to become LeBron James and like a star. What it is because I can tell you this, like I felt like I was pretty good. Like I felt like, you know, at the end of my run there, I felt like I was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started going to schools and seeing other teachers. Like, oh my gosh,
yep.
I had no idea that was possible. Like, I just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't be better if you don't know that better exists. You know, so I would think, man, what we do in our classroom is amazing, but I would go see these teachers in their class. I'm like, oh my gosh, I could have been so much better.
Yep.
You know, so I think, it, you just never get there. It's like, this is just the journey. I'm not sure there's even a destination for this teacher thing. It's just you're on the journey, and what I would recommend is just get in classrooms and go visit and see other teachers and see what they're doing. Get online and talk about it and engage and interact and discover what other people are doing in other classes, because they're just amazing teachers out there.
Yeah, and that's, you know, part of my mission, you know, for this podcast is – I have the bigger names on there, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I get the people that are, you know, that have the following, and I want to talk to them. But I also like I tell people, email me, tell me if there's someone rocking it at your school, because I want to talk to that person who doesn't say a freaking word on social media. They never take one picture,
yeah.
But they're destroying it. They're everywhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This building, right?
That's the thing, dude. They're everywhere.
Yeah,
and that's it, man. I've been around. I can tell you schools, like when I go to. You know, I was just at Viter Middle School. It was just devastated with Orangefield. Communities have been devastated. Schools, they don't even have schools, man.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even have schools. They got washed away, man. They're still trying to figure out if they're going to bulldoze it or they're just sitting there. I've been in the Appalachian Mountains at Betty Lane High School. I mean, I've been to these campuses. And when I'm telling you, what they've done for me is they have erased every excuse imaginable.
Yeah.
Like when I show up at a school, and they have everything. They have the facilities and the technology and the funding and resources. And they complain. In my mind, I'm thinking, oh, my God. No, just don't even. Because I can show you a place where they have 48 kids crammed into a classroom with a chalkboard. And they are killing it. And test scores are up exponentially.
Hal, I could literally talk to you forever. You're one of those people who, you know, we just go.
I'll come back. We'll do it again.
Oh my God. Let's just start a podcast. Can we do that? I'm going to put you on the spot right now. We're starting a podcast.
I'm ready.
I'll cut that out. Anyway. Hal, before I let you go,
yeah.
Where do you want people to find you, man? Plug whatever you want to plug. Let's plug that amazing podcast that you – I'm a fan.
I don't even know the name of it, but I'll plug it. Hal Bowman's Teaching a Rockstar Podcast. I believe you find it at Hal Bowman's Podcast, I think is what it is titled currently. But if you go to halbowman.com, you can check it out there. What else, man? We got Teaching a Rockstar events coming up all of August. We're booking dates now. We have a few dates left in August. August, I'll be on the road, man, for three, four weeks straight. I'll probably do 18 gigs inside of 4 weeks. And then be the one. We're booking dates for September right now.
Boom. So if people want you at their campus, they need to talk to you now.
HalBowman.com. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/HalBowman. At Hal Bowman everywhere, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I think I got some on Pinterest. I don't know. I'm not even sure how that thing works.
That is it, ladies and gentlemen. I need you
to share this episode, if you got something from it, I need you to reach out to Hal. Tell him what is up. He's seeing massive growth over there on his social media platforms, specifically Facebook. Go be a part of the revolution that's happening over there. I know a lot of y'all support us over there at Teach Me Teacher over there on Facebook. A lot of y'all on Instagram or Twitter. But go over there on Facebook for him. Shout out. Maybe even give him big shout outs on Instagram. That way he has a more reason to come over to that side. You guys know how much I'm on that Instagram game right now. You know that I'm kind of addicted to it. So let's bring him. Let's add another social media account to his plate. Why not? But no, I really do hope you got something from this. Totally enjoying this. We are at the end of season two for Teach Me Teacher. We have one more two-part episode coming up. It is with Miss Katie Warren, who used to be Katie Ingram. She was my first guest. She was my last guest of season one, and now she is going to be my last guest again of season two. She's my reoccurring guest. She always has amazing things to say. Cannot wait to reflect on the year and teaching and just having a great old, good old conversation. Do not miss that episode coming next Monday, ladies and gentlemen. If you never want to miss an episode, go to iTunes, hit that subscribe button, go to Google Play, hit that subscribe button, go to wherever you're getting the podcast, because some of y'all use some weird programs to get the podcast, which, hey, I'm not judging, but hit subscribe wherever you're at. After you hit subscribe, go ahead, leave a star, leave a review. The reviews are ticking in. Every time I post on Instagram, you guys show up and do it. Now, if everyone on here who is listening to this episode right now gave us a review, hit that subscribe button. Even if you don't do an actual review, just hit that star button. It'll literally change the lives of so many people. It'll make this podcast get out there more. That means we rank higher. And with the ever-increasing competitive market of educator podcasts, it is so important for you guys to support the work that you do. So if you're enjoying it, please consider supporting the show by sharing, liking, reviewing, hitting that star button. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com where you can get every episode straight to the device of your choice, regardless of if you're an Apple or an Android or a weird technology user. From there, you can find all of the social links to follow me over there on Instagram or the Teach Me Teacher Facebook page, or follow me over there on Twitter. Everything is there for you. I am here for you guys. You know my DMs are open. You know my inboxes are open. If you have a question, if you want to email me, let's chat. Let's see those shout outs on the stories. I love those. You guys who are doing them, y'all are my people. I respond to absolutely everything. So feel free, contact me. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, have a good one.